Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
And welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. You probably can hear, or I hope you can hear in the background, some noise, a bit of clinking and a mechanical noise. Well, let me explain that from the very beginning. We are on a cogwheel rail line, and it's historically very important. Also, the rolling stock, the car we're in, the coach, is more than 100 years old, built in 1893. But of more concern to us is where we're going, because we're going to one of Switzerland's lesser-known destinations, at least lesser-known in the sense of international tourism. It's called the Schinnige Platte, and I'll translate that more or less in English. It means the Shining Plate or the Shining Plateau. A bit of a mystery there. We're going to find out what that means and why it's referred to a little later on. But first, I want to welcome an old friend. He's Hans Zurbuchen of the Jungfrau Railways, and I say that in the plural because the Jungfrau Railways is a network of various lines which serve the Bernese Oberland, the highland area of the canton or state of Bern. Hans, welcome for the first time, but not for the last time, I'm sure, to Switzerland in Sound. You're looking well, and we have a fine day today to go to the Schinnige Platte. It looks like a classic day. Would you agree?
Yes, it's beautiful today. And welcome, Bob. It's nice to have you with us again, and it's nice to have everyone who is listening to us and joining us on our way to the Schinnige Platte.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I have to describe this. There'll be a picture here on the website as well. But I have to describe this because we are in an open-air car. And this is perfect for the summer. It's nature's own air conditioning. When you start climbing up at these altitudes, the air gets rather fresh and cool, even in the hot summers. Let's look at this particular line and also the rolling stock. When was the Schinnige Platte line constructed?
It was built in the 1890s and finished in 1893. We are lucky on this railway line. There was never an accident in 111 years.
That's a pretty good safety record, I think we could all agree. How long will it take us to get up to the top here to the Schinnige Platte?
The trip takes 50 minutes and it goes to a height of 1,967 meters.
And at this pace, 15 kilometers or 9-point-something miles an hour, it's almost like you're doing the walking. You're not whizzing past. You can absorb everything you see. If you look in one direction, just outside, you can touch the flowers. You can touch the alpine flowers and the flora here. And there are hills all around us. And if we look in the other direction, we can look down on the turquoise water of the Lake of Thun, which stretches from the city of Thun to the city of Interlaken and everything in between. And you can even see the lake steamers down there. We'll take a break. We have maybe another half an hour or so in our journey up to the Schinnige Platte, and we'll talk more about it when we get up to the top. For now, let's just enjoy the ride. Well, Hans Zurbuchen, we have arrived at the Schinnige Platte, and like so many of the reports I do about Switzerland, I have to use the same words. What a magnificent view. But we'll have this view on the website. In fact, it's actually very prominent on the website. Part of the view that we have in front of us now is on the home page of Switzerland in Sound. We see some of the highest Alps of Switzerland. We see the trilogy of the Eiger, Mönch and Jungfrau, which is, of course, the centerpiece of the Bernese Oberland right in front of us. We're at a terrace restaurant here with dozens of people sitting outside. We're wearing dark glasses, sun cream, because the sun is so intense here at nearly 2,000 meters, which is something like, well, I can't do it off the top of my head, well over 6,000 feet. And people are just relaxing. They're enjoying lunch. We'll have a little bit of lunch later on, but let's do some work first. Hans, at the very beginning of this report, We talked about the Schinnige Platte, meaning the shining plate, which is the literal translation from Swiss German into English. Why is it called the Schinnige Platte, the shining plate?
We saw when we arrived the rock is cut like plates and those plates it shines in the sun, especially on an evening if the sun is low. You can see it from all over, as far as you can see, if no mountain is in the way.
How long have present day facilities been up here? For example, the hotel restaurant and the Alp Garden, the Alpine Garden, botanical garden here.
The hotel was from the beginning, and the Alpine Garden was made in 1927.
As a matter of fact, as we've been walking around here, I've been hearing some English, hearing some French, certainly a lot of German being spoken. I'll be a bit rude and just come over to these people here at a table. Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt your aperitif. I believe you've just had some drinks before lunch. Where are you from?
We're from Yorkshire.
In Northern England, then.
We are from Hull, and it's really beautiful. That we have nothing like this in England, and it's absolutely fantastic.
You're together?
Yes, that's my wife, who you've just spoken to.
And what are your impressions of the Schinnige Platte?
Well, this is my second visit, and you have a little time that you don't come, and you forget how beautiful it is till you come back again.
Well, you're obviously enjoying yourselves up here, and there's a third person at the table. Where are you from?
I'm from Bern.
Where's that?
Capital of Switzerland.
We forget that sometimes. Not Geneva, not Zurich. It is Bern, the Swiss federal capital. And, well, have you been up to the Schinnige Platte before yourself?
I have been to the Schinnige Platte many, many, many years ago. And I forgot a bit how beautiful it is here. And it is a great uplift to be up here on the Schinnige Platte.
People talk about a panoramic view. That is exactly what we have. It literally is more than 180 degrees. I can't measure it, but it's well over 200 or 230 degrees. Everywhere you look, left and right and in the center, beautiful mountains. Hans, what is the best time to come into the Schinnige Platte?
It's always the best time.
You're a real diplomat.
when the season starts, that's usually at the beginning of June. It's spring up here. The first flowers come out just after the snow is melted, and then later on we have all the summer flowers, and in autumn it's the best time for the view usually.
It's very clear, the air, isn't it?
And it's usually very, very clear, yes.
There's something else here, and it goes back a few years. It's an exhibition of teddy bears. Now, this at first sight doesn't seem to have anything to do with the Schinnige Platte. What's the idea behind it?
We met the lady from Switzerland who had a teddy bear collection of 1,200 teddies.
She liked teddy bears.
she still likes them, and she just didn't have enough room for them anymore, and she wanted a place where people can see them, and she gave them to us, and since then we have an exhibition in the Mountain Hotel on the Schinnige Platte.
Let's go and look at it quickly. Then it's just around the corner, up a little bit of a paved ramp here. I wonder about the hotel. We're just entering the hotel, Hans, and you mentioned it was here from the beginning. We're just inside it now. Beautiful grand tour style of the Oberland. We just want you to hear this for a moment. This is the main dining room of the restaurant. It's hard for me to estimate. There must be probably 100 people here, or even more. And we have waiters and waitresses darting around, people walking in with backpacks, and they've obviously been spending some time up here and looking forward to a lunch. Let's leave these people to enjoy their meal. Now let's go and see the teddy bears. And they're having a good time indeed. Oh, I love these hotels, Hans. They have such history. And here, as we go upstairs, there are pictures already of teddy bears on the wall.
When we started to do this exhibition, we thought it was something for children, and we found out that there are people really all over the world who are fascinated by teddy bears. There are people who just come for the teddy bears. It's unbelievable.
What's really nice, all of these teddy bears are exhibited with a scene around them. They're not just static. They're not just a collection of teddy bears in cases. I mean, they're actually, here's one, for example, standing underneath a mushroom with a backpack. So it's not a theme park devoted to teddy bears, but it has different themes which are treated here. And different sizes. What are the biggest and smallest teddy bears, do you know?
One is as big as a man. Small one I know is about 3 centimeters.
Oh, the end of the corridor here. Imagine getting up in the morning. We don't have to imagine, I can see it. Getting up in the morning and looking out on the Lake of Thun. Is that Interlaken down there, Hans?
We can see Spiez. That's at the middle of the lake. And
between Interlaken and Thun.
If we could see around the corner, we would see Thun. It's not far off the edge there.
And there are people just sitting on the benches out there. It's almost like a religious ceremony that they're doing. They're sitting just staring out, talking to one another, their eyes fixed or going left and right, just trying to absorb the immenseness of the beauty here from the Shiniger Platte. Speaking of beauty, there's another form of alpine beauty here, and in a way it's the centerpiece of the Shiniger Platte, and that is the botanical alpine garden. Well, you can hear in the background we have a number of voices around us, a number of people. This is the end of the General Assembly of the society which is responsible for maintaining the real centerpiece of the Shiniger Platte. It's the Botanical Alpine Garden, or the Alpine Botanical Garden. It's a matter of linguistic philosophy. Hans Surbuchen, we're nearing the end of this program, but you've been kind enough to find a leading authority on this subject. Who are we speaking to?
We are speaking to Professor Otto Heck, the scientific advisor of the Botanical Alpine Garden.
How many different kinds of flora exist at this altitude and in this particular climate?
In the Alpine Garden we have about 560 species, different species. In the surrounding of the Alpine Garden, around Schinige Platte, there are about 500 species occurring in the wild.
So some of them have been brought in from other parts of Switzerland, I presume.
That's right. We try to have all plants existing above the timberline in Switzerland.
There are products, for example, sweets, candies, and teas based on alpine herbs and plants. There seems to be a real pharmacology based around these alpine plants. They do have, many of them anyway, medicinal uses. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And we have a part of our garden to show these medicinal plants.
In fact, I think Swiss folk medicine is largely based on these preparations.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. And this is a living, outdoor, perfectly natural setting. It's a natural museum. There are no buildings here of any kind except the entrance where there's an audiovisual show and a couple of audiovisual aids. But otherwise, you are alone here in nature's own museum. Professor Otto Heck, thank you so much indeed, the scientific advisor to the society which looks after the Alpine Botanical Garden here at the Shiniger Platte at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters in the Bernese Oberland. Thank you so much for being with us. And my thanks also to Hans Surbuchen of Jungfrau Railways for his kind help in producing this program.
Speaking of sound, not an awful lot of sound where we're located at the moment, at least on this particular day. We'll explain that later. But my good friend Aubrey Diem, retired Canadian professor of history and geography and a resident of Switzerland and not too far away from where we're located right now, is with me to talk about the world-famous Simplon Mountain Pass. We are in the upper portion, the German-speaking portion, of Canton, or the state of Valais, V-A-L-A-I-S, also known in German as Wallis, W-A-L-L-I-S. And where we're standing right now is at the top of the mountain pass at 2,005 meters of altitude, and that's getting pretty close to 7,000 feet of altitude. And the air is clear. We have a beautiful sunshiny day, although even though we're recording this in the month of May, towards the end of May, it's still crisp and cool, and it even gets below freezing here at this time of the year. 2,005 meters, and we're standing right in front of the famous landmark here, one of them anyway, the Simplon Hospice, which used to be a monastery, but was opened also as a hospice by the Augustinian monks in the year 1831 and has been open ever since. Aubrey, the Simplon Pass. This is one of Switzerland's most important and certainly famous mountain passes. And it has a long history going back to the Romans.
Yes, and even before the Romans, they know that the people, the Celts who lived on both sides of the Alps, they came over these places, and they even left they left bits and pieces of gold and various other things which have been discovered. But later, during the Middle Ages, it was very important for the movement of salt from the south to the
north. Salt was an important commodity. It was almost like gold, wasn't it?
Very, very important. And as well, textiles, particularly silk fabric, which came from the south and was headed for the north, even to Belgium, where a lot of it was made into fine clothing.
But even until the present day, it's one of the most important and used mountain passes linking Switzerland and Italy, just down on the other side. But we have another European figure of great renown who also was interested in the Simplon Pass, also for strategic reasons, not only commercial reasons, and his name was Napoleon.
Yes, Napoleon was here around the 1800s, and he brought part of his army over this pass, and the other part was going over the Grand San Bernard at the same time, and he discovered that this was a faster route than the Grand San Bernard route, and then they had big battles against the Austrians at Marengo in the Po Plain. And then he was in control of Switzerland at that time as well, and he was instrumental in paving this pass and making it more of a strategic pass than it even was before, and he was thinking mainly for military reasons.
And that was the early 19th century.
Yeah, 1800 before he invaded Russia, for example.
One of the local people, a man by the name of von Stockalper, who was a native of Brieg, and in fact a very, very wealthy man. There's even the so-called von Stockalper Palace down there, which was his residence. He made his money, among other things, on importing salt from Italy.
Well, he had his own private army. He assured the merchants that he was, in a way, he gave them insurance that their goods would come through if he carried them in transit. And that's what he did. And there was a hospice built by Stockalper on the pass to help people who were going through overnight so they could stay. And then, of course, this very beautiful and very important building in Brieg, which is really one of the biggest attractions in this part of Valais.
Now, just geographically, let's fix the location here, more or less where we are, north and south.
Well, the pass began at Brieg. You would come up the Rhone Valley from Lake Geneva, and you could go past Martigny, where the Grand San Bernard Pass went into Italy, and then continue. And at Brieg, you could go over the pass to Domodossola in Italy, and then to the south. And, of course, goods coming the other way could go both through Brieg and down the Rhone Valley and into northwestern Europe, or else they could go east over the Furka route, and that would take them into the eastern part of Switzerland and also into Austria.
Is it true that I've heard that the Simplon Pass
pass in terms of traffic and importance is second only to the famous Gotthard?
Yes, and like the Gotthard, as with most of these mountain passes, a very important rail tunnel was built at the beginning of the 20th century, end of the 19th century. That's 17 kilometers long.
Over 10 miles.
Yeah, and today they have reinstituted the car trains, which carry cars. They had them at the beginning, then they stopped. Now it's part of the pass. And in addition to that, the new basis tunnel on the Lichtburg, which carries merchandise from Basel through the Lichtburg tunnel and into Italy, will carry these trucks through the Simplon tunnel and to Italy.
So we have not only the famous mountain pass, let's walk towards the hospice here and see if we can find someone to talk to inside, get a little bit more information about it. Not only the pass, but also, of course, the rail tunnel, and it is a rail tunnel, but really, this is such an easy pass to do. If people think of mountain passes as hairpin turns, twists and turns, not many of them here. It's one of the easiest of the Swiss Alpine passes to get over.
Also, it's kept open all winter long, except when it's really bad storms, they have to close it. But they built protection against avalanches, against rock falls, and therefore trucks, cars can go through all winter long, which, unlike the Grand San Bernard Pass, that's closed.
Yeah, that we've done that, of course, you and I, and it's featured on another part of the website here, under Places and Things. The great Saint Bernard, but this one, as you say, is open all year round. And here we are in the halls. We've come into the hospice, and not too much doing, because ironically, even though we're talking about the pass being open, there's some road construction on the Italian side, so you can't drive to Italy today. That's why it's so quiet.
The Italian side is not as good as the Swiss side, and they're making it better, and of course that involves all kinds of blasting and all kinds of heavy equipment, so they've just closed the pass.
Yeah, and occasionally in bad weather, they do get landslides and rock slides there. Well, here it is. We're the only thing that's open here that I can see is the bar with a little cafe and restaurant inside. And let's go in and. Grüße maintenant. Bonjour. Hello. I hear some activity in the kitchen in the back. Ah, and someone is coming out. Hello. Do you speak English?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay, what is your name?
My name is Thomas Branchen.
And you're a local of the Simplon area?
Yes, not really from the Simplon. My place of origin is St. Niklaus.
Well, which is close to Zermatt, of course.
Yes, in the valley of Zermatt.
What is it like to live up here and work up here on the pass? Does it get lonely sometimes?
No, not at all. For me, it's very, very good because I like the mountains and I like the calm and I like prayer.
Oh, to pray?
To pray, yes.
Are you a monk yourself?
No, I'm not. I'm just attached to the religion.
Yes, it's certainly a wonderful place to meditate, to find peace and quiet.
Yes,
and you're closer to God up here, too, at 2,005 meters.
Really, indeed, yes.
Who comes here to stay at the hospice?
It's very different. There are alpinists. We had alpinists mainly the months of March and April. And then during summer we have families who comes with their children to make holidays here. And
picnicking, hiking, this sort of thing, walking?
Yes, every kind of sport.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a beautiful place to walk and to hike, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And during winter we have also very often classes from the college, from Saint-Maurice or from Sion.
The religious courses?
Yes, and they mix a bit with religion and sport. Mm-hmm. They make half-day sport and half-day meditations.
You also have a bar and a small restaurant here. I see there are two men who are eating. Is this open to the public?
If they are announced, they can come. But if they are not announced, if there is something to eat, they can have it, but we do not especially make for them.
You can't guarantee it.
Yes.
But of course, if anyone wants to eat up here at the pass, there are other restaurants along the way.
Yes, of course, yes.
Now, this was a monastery and a hospice dating back to 1831, and it was founded by Augustinian monks. Are they still in presence here? Are they still in residence?
Of course, they are still keeping the house, and sometimes there are only two, or between two and five, six, they are always here.
Well, thank you very much, Thomas, and it was very fascinating to find out this information. Thank you indeed.
Thank you.
We're going to go outside again. Yes. Aubrey, let's go back outside and leave these nice people to enjoy their lunch. Bye-bye. Au revoir. Guten Abend. Okay, you're not quite sure what to speak here, because I believe those were French speaking
Swiss.
Swiss.
Yeah. Oh.
You were speaking High German with them.
Well,
you see, everybody speaks everything. In fact, even up here on the Simplon Pass, you can come in and speak English even. But this place really, it's very quiet today, because it's really between seasons. It's neither fish nor fowl season, you know. We still see some snow around us here, of course.
Yeah. There's high mountain touring now. He even mentioned that
ski
before, and that they can do now, but there's no piste skiing.
Let's go back into history again, Aubrey, because as we come out, something very conspicuous, in fact, you can see it very, very clearly from the road if we walk out into the large parking area here right in front of the hospice, and also a little pond, which is so beautiful. And this is rugged. This is unspoiled nature here. You know, there's a minimum of development. It's really pure nature.
Very minimalistic as far as development is concerned.
Now, let's stop here because I don't know how high it is, but it looks to me probably something like maybe 30 or 40 feet high. It's a gigantic. I've been up there once years ago. Eagle. It's an eagle built of stone.
There's some people there now, so you get a little bit of scale.
Yeah,
but that's very interesting.
Yeah. Now, what is the symbolism of that? That eagle is looking south, and that's for a very good reason. We go back to the Second World War.
Well, of course, Switzerland was neutral in the Second World War, and it was surrounded by...
But it was armed.
it was surrounded by either occupied countries by the Nazis or else by the Italians, who were fascist and allies of the Nazis.
And, of course, there was a military presence up here, a very, very strong one. In fact, in these mountains here, tucked away and probably not even officially declassified yet, are probably a number of bunkers and fortifications. And this gigantic stone eagle looking south, obviously is a good reason looking south, that's where the enemy would come from, of course, if he was going to come, was built by some of those veterans who were stationed up here. And that must have been a pretty rough time. Winters are very difficult here, of course, and I can imagine that it was not exactly a popular posting.
Well, not only that, but at all seasons there was people being smuggled over from the south, from Italy into Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And of course, sometimes they would be intercepted by the border guards, and sometimes they wouldn't be intercepted by the border guards. And they have their tales to tell too, because they were stuck in weather that suddenly changed into very difficult conditions, and they were not accustomed, of course, to going over the mountains, their clothing, their boots, and so on.
And of course, there were no spy satellites. There was nothing like this, so they didn't know what was coming, and they really had to be watching the south from Italy, occupied Italy. And of course, one of your favorite topics too, Aubrey, you've written extensively about this, and that is the resistance movement on the Italian side. That must have been a beehive of activity around here.
Well, all these valleys, for example, the valley which the Simplon Pass goes down to, the Domodossola area, there was resistance there, as there was in the Grand San Bernard Valley, and that came at a very early stage in the war, in the sense that Italy was out of the war in 1943. Then there was a period where nothing much happened. And then the last couple of years, 44 and then 45, were filled with resistance from the partisans who had organized themselves in northern Italy against the Nazis.
Now, we said before that the Simplon Pass technically gets started already in Brieg. That's where you access it. Oh, here comes a big Swiss postal bus here. Some people coming by to take a break at the hospice, or they're picking up passengers here, and there are no passengers to pick up, it seems to me, not today anyway. But on the other end of the pass, let's call it the Italian side, although the pass does not actually stretch into Italy, it comes to about 1 mile or so, or a mile or so from Italy, and that's the village of Gondo. There was a terrible disaster there a few years ago.
It was due to very heavy rains, which flooded the whole northern part of Italy. And Gondo is just a customs post, and it rises straight up from the customs post into the mountains, and that's where the buildings were. And one part of the mountain just tore loose because of all of the rain. And I don't know how many people were killed, but it was a goodly number who were just swept to their death from this rock fall.
And one or two were still missing. And I have to tell you, I went through Gondo the day before it happened. So timing is everything.
Your guardian angel's taking care of you. That's the only way to explain it.
I guess so. And it's funny, in Gondo, G-O-N-D-O, it's a very Italian-sounding name, and probably somewhere in distant history it belonged to Italy or was populated by Italians. And you're very likely to hear as much Italian spoken there in that tiny village as you will German or Swiss-German dialect. In fact, a lot of people stop there for gasoline before going into Italy, where it's much more expensive. And the people who run the gas stations there all speak Italian. It's an interesting part of the world here indeed.
Well, like many parts of Switzerland which are unknown to the tourist trade, there are these little gems of history, and as we have seen, that little gem of history way down in the south, I mean, it's not near the pass summit. It was an area that was completely devastated, and I'm sure plenty of Swiss didn't even know about it, but because of these terrific rains which swept that area, and in the mountains, the rocks are always coming down as far as they can go, and that's just the way, the normal erosion of the mountains.
Aubrey Diem, retired Canadian professor of history and geography. Thank you very much indeed. From the top of the Simplon Pass at 2,005 meters above sea level and standing right in front of the historic Simplon Hospice, for Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.